This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at the Jenkins Conference with Sacha Labouré.
Hello again.
Sacha, can you give us an update on where DevOps is at the moment?
Sure. I think DevOps is really in full acceleration from an enterprise adoption standpoint. DevOps has been around for obviously a very long time in terms of the practitioners, and we've seen teams and change agents in organizations force DevOps in those organizations. What I think is new is that a lot more companies are really seeing this from a top-down fashion and understand that it's something they need to apply across the board in these organizations and not just have quote-unquote rogue team do shadow IT and find their way through to do DevOps. So that's a big change we're seeing.
One of the challenges for them is not just looking at the various different sets of processes they have in development and operations and how do they bring those into a coherent set of processes, but introducing automation, which requires that those processes become very simple, because you can't automate a complex process, it becomes too risky. Are you seeing a lot more maturity and understanding from people as to what they need to be doing?
Yeah, I think it takes time. It's a lot of rewiring. We love to talk about product and technology, but as you know, it's a lot about people as well and processes, and that might be the hardest part of the job. And so people have to essentially unlearn and relearn what's the right way to do things. The good thing, though, is that after trying a few times to automate something complicated, they end up understanding on their own that simple is better.
You're introducing a whole bunch of new things here at the show. A couple of them got my attention in particular. One of them is DevOptics. Can you give us a view as to exactly what it is and how it's going to work?
We're very, very excited about DevOptics. And really, it's all about data. Data is king. What I mean here is that if you look at an ERP in a company, today people store everything in an ERP. That's obvious. It's not like you sell something, you print the invoice, you send it to the customer, and then you say, well, we can delete stuff now, we've got the invoice ready, you move on. Yet, that's exactly what happens in DevOps. We're doing a lot of code changes, we're going through a lot of tools, we're making all of those modifications, but all of that data just vanishes.
But why is that? Because if I look at the development process, for years we've kind of tracked how a particular product has gone. We've started to learn how to look across multiple projects so that we can see if the same mistakes are being made by the development teams again and again, so that we can improve the quality of our development. Why is it that the information is not being kept in mind more regularly?
I think it's because DevOps, for the most part, has almost been adopted in many, many cases as a feature. And then we replicate that feature across 1,000 teams, but it's a feature at scale. It's not an enterprise solution. Now we're moving towards more of a place where, much like an ERP, we're building the next generation system of record for IT processes. You want to record everything. And so if you look at Jenkins, it sits in this fantastic position where essentially we know about every change in code that takes place. We know who did that change, as part of what team, for what modules, that's going to lead in what applications, how much time did it take, what tools along the way it used, what was the outcome of those tools. We need to store all of that information. And from there, once you have that data stored in that data model that we were building, then you get to extract incredibly useful insights into how you can improve the way you do things and accelerate your velocity.
But that's a lot of places to be capturing data from, a lot of log files to put in, a lot of information that has to be transformed and brought into the data store.
Well, not quite. That's the beauty of it, if you think about it, because Jenkins is orchestrating all of those steps. So actually, it is kind of a hub-and-spoke model, where Git sends us, for example, this information, oh, new code. All right, I know who did that, and I know what code it does. But Jenkins owns this pipeline, so it knows what the next step is going to be, what tool it's going to call, what's going to be the output of that call. So all of that is actually pretty easy to record in a central fashion by Jenkins. It would not be easy to do otherwise, but we have this situation where Jenkins is at the core, and so we can actually pretty easily record that. And today, we don't do it, and we don't extract and mine that amazing source of data.
How do you then build the analytics on top? Because there's two ways to do this. The first is you can go out and you can get a whole bunch of data scientists who will sit around for the next 3 years, create complicated models, complicated formula, and in most organizations, nobody will have a clue what it means at the end of the day. Or you could look at an AI and you could say, okay, let's feed it into this, let's allow it to learn a bit of machine learning in place. That way we can start to do predictive modeling, we can look at how often we're failing, where we're failing, is it a repeated fail where we're not learning a lesson? Or are you using another route?
Initially, it's all about building the data, and we're going to have a focus on some very specific use cases. So we're not yet in the AI camp. We understand it's extremely valuable, and we're definitively going to get there. But today, there are a number of things we know are extremely valuable, and we want to focus on those use cases. What we do not want to do is give a generic BI solution on top of this data and say, you know what, you can draw your own report. Just put an X and Y axis, put some metric along the way, and you're going to get great graphs. But you don't learn anything out of that. What we know, however, is through our extensive discussions with lots of companies, is where value can be unlocked. What things are known to be pain points? So those are extremely opinionated reports that we're starting to build to start with. For example, what is the structure of the delivery of your application? We're talking about pipelines and teams, but those are just teams and pipeline. That's not why you wake up at night. You wake up because your application has a problem. But your application can be the consequence of maybe a dozen teams working on frameworks and subsystems and so on. Yet, no tool out there gives you this live perspective on all of those teams and all of those frameworks being built towards an application. That's an opinionated view and the number of insights we can give you access to. You don't get to see what is the velocity of your teams and are they improving or not. When you go at conferences, you always see the three same teams from the same companies talking about how great they are. And so you think, well, this company is pretty amazing. Sometimes they are. But in reality, what we see is that you always have those top gun teams. And then you have this huge cohort of teams that are not doing so great. However, if you could find a way to see that cloud of teams, they're not all moving towards this nirvana of greatness, well, actually you can start helping those teams and having more teams do better work rather than to have just a few superstar teams.
Now, we've tried to do that with Agile. We've learned the lesson that you can't just keep Agile teams together, because what happens is you get one or two super teams who know what they're doing, and the knowledge doesn't get shared around. So one of the lessons from Agile has been keep breaking those teams up, keep taking those people who are very good, putting with people who are not so good, and you bring the overall level up. But that's kind of taken us a long time to understand that, because there was no metrics that we could use. What have you brought in here in terms of metrics and other mechanisms that people can use to understand what's going on and then set new targets?
So, for example, what we offer as part of DevOps Deliver is essentially we extend the data model that Jenkins provides with new concepts such as team and application. Believe it or not, those objects or those classes of objects do not exist as part of Jenkins. Once you've got that, we offer a way to actually define what an application looks like based on all of those teams and projects and so on. And then you get a way to identify specific streams, specific features or fixes along that value stream in your organization, and you can track how things are evolving. In most organizations, when you know that, for example, your application is going to be impacted by a security issue, you just know that at some point you'll have to fix it, but who is responsible for that, how it's going to take place, it's completely unknown. With this, you get to immediately do a search, see in real time what team is responsible for that specific security fix. And if that's not moving, if that's not progressing, you know exactly what to do, who to call. At the end of the day, a lot of that remains a human interaction, so you need to interact with that team. But you know who to talk to. You have an educated discussion with that person rather than trying to sniff around to find who needs to fix that.
Is this going to run as an on-premise product, or is it going to be run in the cloud?
So what's very important for us is that our own solution, CloudBees Jenkins Enterprise, can be operated anywhere. However, we made a choice for at least the initial release of DevOptics. It's going to be centrally hosted, so it's a SaaS. And so those clusters, that they're on-premise or not, will be shipping some of that data in an anonymized fashion to this SaaS. And then we're going to compute those reports centrally and then dispatch those or visualize those on-premises. But this is really a SaaS that goes along what's otherwise a platform that can be deployed on-premise.
How far can you go with that? If you've got the data as anonymized data, are you going to start to say, okay, we've got 1,000 customers in here, we've got anonymized data from them, actually we can look across that big set of data and start to find trends, things that we can feed back to customers that might not be applicable to them today, but actually they're trends we're seeing going on?
We're starting to think along those lines. We have some project ongoing, so it's not yet released, but we have some stuff along those lines that we're doing. We're also hearing feedback from customers. Some don't even want their data to be used, even anonymously. So we need to have an opt-in, opt-out type of behavior. But that's pretty standard. You've got that with LinkedIn. You might want people to see that you're looking at their profile or not. Well, if you don't want, fine, but you're not going to get access to who is seeing your profile either. So it's you're in or you're out. So there are ways to play with that, and we're sensitive to this problem. But absolutely, creating kind of those industry baseline is hugely powerful.
You've also announced the Jenkins Advisor Service, which seems to dovetail quite nicely into this, particularly if you've got this large body of data, the ability to actually start to talk to people. Can you give us a bit of a view as to what the advisor service will actually do and who it's targeted at?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited by Advisor. Essentially, what our support team have started doing a few years back, which I thought was an amazing idea, is when they started seeing problems that were recurring, they started implementing rules that would discover those issues as part of configuration files, log files, or whatever. The way it works at CloudBees is whenever a customer opens a support ticket, by default, we're going to upload a number of files related to that ticket. And automatically, we apply those rules to that set, and we can extract tons of knowledge that might or might not help directly with the support case, but that way we converge faster towards customers having a stable environment. What we did is we took that pretty big knowledge base, and we made it as a SaaS. What we're going to do is make a plugin available to anybody in the open source community so they don't need to be customers. Once they subscribe to that free service, we're going to regularly check their configuration and send them back a report as to where they stand, where they could improve with their existing configuration. So it's really a way to bring a service to the community that helps stabilize the overall environment.
It's very easy to be cynical about that and say that this is a pre-sales pitch by Jenkins.
It is. I think so, yeah. Let me be very open. You know, there is a saying that says if it's free, you're the product. Yeah, well, it's kind of that. You know, I used to be at JBoss before that. We had a very different way to interact with the community. Essentially, the community was a company that had some advantages from a business standpoint, but from a community standpoint, I think it also had a number of side effects that were not necessarily great. It tend to dry up the community. The situation with the Jenkins community is very different. It's an independent community. They have their own board, and we're CloudBees. We're a company, and we're treating this community with a lot of respect. It means, for example, we don't know all of the users of that community. When we were at JBoss, we would say, oh, you want to download the documentation? Give us your name. We don't do that with Jenkins, and that's great. However, we still have an incentive to know better who is using Jenkins. We're going to do it by providing value to those people, and hopefully they will find value in that service and be okay for us to get to know them better. But at the end of the day, everybody is going to be free to subscribe, not subscribe, and decide to become a customer or not. But yeah, for us, that's really one of the intents.
One of the challenges last year that came up was the number of orphan services and orphan plugins that have been built on the Jenkins platform and the decision to either adopt them, persuade other people to adopt them, or to get rid of them. This seems like an opportunity to look at them. You've got the advisor service. It should be able to speed up telling people what services or plugins they can use, but also identify which ones are not being used. Is that part of the plan?
Yeah, I think it's beyond the cynical view on this. There are a lot of things we can learn and improve Jenkins for everybody. So you're right, learning more about what plugins are really people using, what plugins are creating problems. We're going to have a much bigger data set if a bigger segment of the community is using it rather than, quote-unquote, just our customers. So yeah, there's really a lot of learning we can take out of this for the good of everybody, and that's totally the way we intend to use it as well.
The third announcement that got my attention was the MSP program. And again, that seems to pull together potentially the DevOptics and the advisor service in that you're giving the MSPs much more power, you're giving them something they can install and run. For those companies who are already doing cloud-first deployment, they're in the MSP world. Their data is there, their code is there, the tools they're using all live there. What actually are the MSPs going to be running themselves? Because you talk about them providing the infrastructure, but in the release you also talk about CloudBees doing the management.
To set context on this, a lot of enterprises want to use more of the cloud, obviously, but not all workloads are equal when it comes to the cloud. Typically, the team operating SAP R3 are not the first one to raise their hand to say, hey, let's go to the cloud, let's do something fun today. So you try to always find the right candidates to do that. CI/CD is an amazing use case to leverage the cloud. It's a great way to get started with the cloud. So a lot of people want to do it. At the same time, the educated DevOps resources that a company can afford can be relatively scarce. When a company has to invest in managing their GitHub, Jira, CloudBees environment in the cloud, well, the DevOps resources are going to put at work doing this. They're not going to put them at work implementing their own product for their own customers. So there is kind of a draconian choice to make here. A lot of companies have been asking us, you know what, if you could operate that for us, manage that for us. We don't want a SaaS because we want to customize it. We're going to have very specific requirements in terms of security, VPC, and what's not. We just want a managed hosting offering for that. We've set up that program and we've looked for partners that are a certified managed hoster on AWS, so they need to go through the AWS certifications that exist for that, and they also need to be certified on our own product. All of the partners we're announcing, five of them to start with, are specialized actually in managed hosting for DevOps. So they are used to operate things like Jira and GitHub. And so for them, it's going to be very natural to operate our product as well. What that means at the end of the day is that those organizations will be able to leverage the cloud and increase their workload in the cloud rather than increasing their workload on-premise. They're going to do it without sacrificing their DevOps resources to do that rather than other type of product work. And they're going to get a completely custom environment that fits their own requirements.
That's quite a big investment for the MSPs, though, isn't it? They've got to be certified with AWS. They've then got to be certified with yourself. What level of charge, what level of revenue do you see the MSPs making from this?
All MSPs have their own pricing scheme, so that really depends. It also depends on the level of sophistication and customization you want. You're going to find some more standardized offering versus very customized a la carte offering. And then on top of that, you need to pay for the CloudBees Jenkins Enterprise platform itself.
Sasha, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Ian.